Each 4th of July, many of us crowd at waterfronts, on rooftops, and around television sets to watch the explosive magic of fireworks. Although large professional pyrotechnic displays are a favorite, some people also enjoy setting up fireworks on their own, and this year is the first time since 1909 that residents in certain counties in New York State can legally light fireworks for the holiday. Although we should note that the change in the law still prohibits residents of New York City's five boroughs from putting on their own pyrotechnic shows. Joining us now for a Please Explain look at fireworks is journalist and historian Jack Kelly, author of the book Gunpowder, Alchemy, Bombards, and Pyrotechnics, and Phil Grucci, CEO of Fireworks by Grucci, which has provided pyrotechnic displays for U.S. presidential inaugurations and will be putting on over 65 displays this Independence Day. I'm very pleased to welcome both of them to our show. And as always, we welcome listener calls. Our number here is 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. Phil, what are the main chemical elements needed to create a firework?
Hi, Leonard.
Hi, Phil.
Well, there's many of them.
Welcome back, by the way.
Thank you very much. We always enjoy being on the show. In fact, I'm sitting here right now in Boston on a beautiful sunny day, preparing for 4th of July, and standing on a barge as I speak with you. But the elements, they're varied. We have a number of both salts, metals, oxidizers, fuels, carbons to create the different colors and the twitters and the glitters that you may see in any one of our effects. The metals particularly are used to be brilliant, very bright, brilliant luminosity, the aluminums, the titaniums, the salts such as sodium, for example. When you burn sodium at a certain temperature, you'll get a nice yellow off of that. Copper, we'll use copper. Again, it's all powdered type of refining of the particulate size, but copper will give a nice blue. So the combinations of how hot you burn each one of those elements will dictate the deepness of the color. Certainly, sometimes too much of a good thing is a bad thing, and you'll burn out the color, and it'll become white. So that's part of the trick of what we do in the manufacturing side of the facility to build some of the fireworks that you may see.
So you really have to know your chemistry.
You do, and you need to know your chemistry and also your safety and risk assessment in the different types of chemicals. Certain chemicals are ideal to make certain colors, but they're certainly not something you would want to introduce into the production element for the safety of your pyrotechnicians, such as arsenics and things of that nature. And also, now there's a real focus on the environment as well. So certain chemicals that we'll use, we may stay away from, that my grandfather may have used back in the day, as we say. So we're always trying to find refinements of the chemistry as well as the physical characteristics of what we're making as well.
Jack, when was the earliest documented use of fireworks?
Leonard, the one subject, I think that the one fact that everybody knows about gunpowder is it was invented in China. And the first fireworks were really developed by the Chinese probably around 1000 A.D., the alchemists were one of the first people to purify various materials, and when they combined three elements, sulfur, potassium nitrate, which is an oxidizer, gives off oxygen when it heats up, and charcoal, which burns very brightly, they produced gunpowder, and from that they developed all the basic tools of fireworks, even that are used today, the exploding element, the rocket, the fountain that shoots out fire. All those were developed very early on by the Chinese.
But you're suggesting that they weren't looking to develop an explosive when they put those things together? It just came as a surprise?
It was sort of ironic that the Chinese were originally looking to develop an elixir of life, that they wanted something, the emperor had ordered something that would help them to live forever. And they experimented with saltpeter or potassium nitrate because they saw that when it was thrown in a fire, it made the fire flame up. So they were they thought, well, maybe if you swallowed it, it would increase your life energy. And
what would have happened if he had swallowed it? Would we have then seen another emperor take the throne?
As a matter of fact, it wouldn't have exploded in his stomach, but many of the elixirs of life that they came up with, which also included mercury, they were very, very hot on mercury, were deadly poisonous, and they were long-term poisons, and a number of emperors went mad from taking these elixirs of life, so they didn't, the alchemists didn't always provide the what was sought.
Now, was the first applications explosives? Were they weaponizing these mixtures, or did they create fireworks from the start?
One of the myths about the Chinese was that they were too wise to turn gunpowder to be used for weaponry, or they were too dumb to figure out that they could do it. And in fact, neither of those was true. They developed a lot of very basic weapons, flamethrowers, landmines, rockets, quite sophisticated rockets, very early on, well before the Europeans got into gunpowder at all. But they, for whatever reason, it's very difficult to pin down, they didn't develop gunpowder warfare the way the Europeans did. And the Europeans came back to China several centuries later with cannon and dominated them.
I'm talking with Jack Kelly, who has written a book called Gunpowder Alchemy, Bombards and Pyrotechnics, and Phil Grucci, CEO of Fireworks by Grucci. And they are responsible for so many of the impressive fireworks displays on the 4th of July and other times. This is WMIC, WMIC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate, and today's Please Explain is a look at fireworks. And Phil, I'm assuming that what you're doing, the chemistry that you employ, is a lot more sophisticated than what those alchemists did a couple of millennia ago. But is the basic premise the same?
It is. It's very much the same. As was mentioned, you have a basic oxidizer-fuel relationship to create the speed of the burn and the temperature of the flame. What is refined is the purity of the chemicals and the ability to control the size of the particles that you're mixing and you're blending in these chemical formulations. So it's given us the ability to take a pyrotechnic device that may have been invented back, as Jack has explained, back 1,000 years ago, and given us the ability to hone in that refinement and be able to take a pyrotechnic device and put it on a stage that's 10 feet away from the audience, for example. And the only way you can do that is by controlling very precisely the size of the metallic particles that you're mixing within the chemical formulation. And then we also have now transitioned from your basic red, orange, yellow, green, blue, your basic colors, to the tones in between. So with the refinement of the chemistry, we're able to achieve the magentas and the aquas and colors that are pretty exotic, as well as the metallics and the glitters and the flitters, and control the duration of the burn, which is very important.
Do they propel themselves? Oh, go ahead.
And when you launch a firework into the sky, for example, and you want to have a very big, beautiful, dynamic willow shell that descends down just about before it gets to the ground, but you don't want it to reach the ground, the controlling of the size and the purity of the charcoal that we use, for example, and the type of charcoal, what kind of wood it comes from, dictates very much so how it's going to perform in the sky.
Wow. Now, do they propel themselves? Or do you have to shoot them in the air?
The fireworks that we primarily manufacture and also use are launched with black powder. Our primary material that we're utilizing in our industry is black powder. We use it for lifting because we're lifting the shell out of a mortar tube, similar to a cannonball would be lifted out of a barrel of a cannon. Different than a rocket, where we're propelling it, where it has a continuous thrust. With the rocket motor, we don't really use many of those. They were used in the early days, but now with the lack of space to display from, or the space is becoming smaller, launching rockets in the sky for a public display creates a danger that's unacceptable, because then you have all the sticks and the rods that are coming down to the ground. So we launched the fireworks from a mortar tube utilizing black powder.
Now, creating effects like the one you mentioned, the willow or flowers, or I've seen all sorts of wild things, that must require incredible timing.
It does. It's a very long, arduous process, because you've got the, as we discussed, the mixing and the perfecting of the colors through the chemistry. Then you get the physical aspect of taking that powder or the chemical formulation and putting it into a form that will burn, that will sustain the lifting and the bursting of that device up in the sky. And then refining it to the point where you're loading each and every one of those items into a cartridge or a shell casing by hand. There's very few steps in the manufacturing process that's automated as compared to many other industries. So it's still very much a craft, and takes many, 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 many months to take an item from start to finish. We happen to make it in volume, so when we have an order for, say, a golden glitter splitting comet, we make thousands of them in a run, so we have enough for our entire season.
But is the timing handled by a computer?
The timing of the launch to the burst, primarily in this day, still controlled by a black powder fuse. So it's burning, the time is slow, delay fuse. When the shell is launched from the mortar, depending on the length of that delay fuse that it's cut, it will dictate how long it will take from the launching to the time that it bursts. But we've developed another technology to replace the black powder fuse and replace it with an electronic microchip. We don't have them in all of our shells. We have them in some specialty items that we've gotten patented, called the Pixel Burst, where when we launch this particular specialty shell in the sky, it creates a dot, a 30-foot diameter dot. And if you could precisely, utilizing the advantages of the microchip, you could precisely control in the sky where that shell is going to break and put that dot, you connect a whole bunch of dots, you could create some really abstract and spectacular effects with that. So we're doing that now. We're utilizing that in our designs. And just recently, this past September, established the Guinness World Record for the largest pyrotechnic image by putting 750 pixel bursts in the sky in an array to create the shape of an American flag for the 200th anniversary of the Star Spangled Banner. So the technology has advanced to that area. It's not fully part of our entire inventory. We still have quite a lot. The vast majority is black powder type fused shells. But we are seeing the migration going in that direction.
Jack, you mentioned that the Chinese didn't weaponize gunpowder. It took European brilliance to come up with that idea. Did the Europeans get the gunpowder through the Silk Road?
It was thought. Now, it's always been somewhat of a mystery, because the Europeans, once they got gunpowder, they denied that the Chinese had ever invented it. They felt that Chinese couldn't have been so ingenious, and it took a European to invent it. In fact, it probably came through the Arabs. The Arabs had contact with the Chinese, and they passed it on to the Europeans. And I just correct you to say, if I misspoke, if I said they didn't weaponize it. The Chinese did have many weapons. They didn't come to the most efficient type of weapon, which is the cannon, but they had many diabolical flamethrowers and so forth that they used in warfare.
But it took the Europeans to come up with cannon and guns.
Yes.
But then, when did fireworks become popular? They were embraced in Italy for some reason, more than other countries?
It was partly the fact that the Italians had the most contact with the East. They had traders and merchants that went out to the East. And also, there may be something in the Italian personality, let's say, that had an affinity to fireworks. During the Renaissance, when the great art was being produced in Italy, was when they began to really develop fireworks in Italy. And the pyrotechnicians in Europe, for even down to today, and also in America, many of them came from Italy, or they had an Italian heritage.
Were the Italians the first to discover that colors could be created by adding additional chemical compounds?
Well, that's a really something more of the modern era. So it's getting into the late 19th century, and it wasn't a discovery. I think you could attribute to any one particular country, but it was more the development of chemistry, the availability of refined metals like magnesium and aluminum made it possible to have the different colors and the more elaborate fireworks.
We have to take a little break, and when we come back, we'll continue this conversation about fireworks, today's Please Explain segment, with journalist and historian Jack Kelly, author of the book Gunpowder Alchemy, Bombards, and Pyrotechnics, and Phil Grucci, CEO of Fireworks by Grucci. He's right now sitting on a barge in Boston where he's preparing for, I guess, the July 4th, one of the many displays. We'll talk a bit more about what goes on these days and invite your calls. Our number here is 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC if you want to get into the conversation. Or you can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. Stay with us for more. And we are back with today's Please Explain, look at fireworks, with Phil Grucci, a man who knows a bit about them. He is the CEO of Fireworks by Grucci, and Jack Kelly, who's written about them in his book Gunpowder, Alchemy, Bombards, and Pyrotechnics. And we're inviting your calls at 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. And before we get to some of my questions, let's put Abe from West Orange, New Jersey on the air. Hi, Abe.
Hello there.
What's your question?
Can you hear me?
We can.
Good. I'm in awe and admiration of every fireworks display that I see. However, I wonder, with the description that the gentlemen have offered of chemicals and chemistry, does the fireworks have any kind of ecological threat when they're ejected?
Okay, the question is, what impact would it have on the environment? Which one of you wants to jump in on that?
Well, I can, if you don't mind, I can start to address it. Obviously, any firework device, there's combustion involved, so there's a carbon aspect to burning wood, which is the charcoal in the metallics that we burn, but. You know, we are refining that process day by day as we, you know, as we work in our laboratories to remove some of the chemistry that has been used in the past, some of the arsenics, as I've mentioned before, Paris Green, for example, things of that nature. But the, you know, if you look at the relative carbon footprint, not to get too deep into the carbon argument of an average fireworks display, is proven by measurement by the comparison to a stadium full of people with generators running and lights playing and things of that nature, it pales to the comparison. So we're doing as much as we can to be prudent, doing our due diligence by selecting the proper chemistry to the best of our abilities.
Now, I seem to remember many years ago, perhaps it was during one of the Macy's fireworks displays, that a rocket came down before it was supposed to and wound up setting off a lot of the other explosives that were on the barge. Is that a problem? How dangerous is this?
Well, that activity that you're talking about, that was back in the mid-70s when that happened. And
well, I'm an old man.
The refining of the fireworks has come a long way since that. Not only the fireworks, also the equipment that's used and the regulations as it relates to distances to the audience. which is a major factor in a safe fireworks program, is how far away are you watching the display from where the discharge of the fireworks actually happen.
And what is a good distance?
Right now, the industry standard and in many states, the actual law is 70 feet per inch of the diameter of the shell. So a traditional, typical fireworks display, the shells range from 3 inches in diameter to 6 inches in diameter, sometimes larger. For example, here in Boston, the largest shell that we're firing is 10 inches in diameter. So 70 feet per inch at that 10 inches is 700 feet from the point of discharge to the audience line is what's required by law.
Now, Jack, have safety concerns about fireworks been around since they were invented?
Absolutely, Leonard, and I would just bring up an incident that was similar to what you referred to back in 1902. William Randolph Hearst was putting on a fireworks display for a political event in Madison Square there in New York. And they had a pile of bombs that were waiting to be sent up in the middle of the city. A spark got on them, the bombs exploded, and there were 17 people killed, hundreds of people injured. So it's always a concern, and I think the safety has improved over the years, immensely. And another area of safety concern, of course, is in consumer fireworks, or the fireworks that people tend to just set off in their backyard. And that peaked around the turn of the 1900, in part because fireworks had gotten more and more, these consumer fireworks and just firecrackers in general had gotten more powerful. And one of the dangers then took a lot of lives was tetanus. And an exploding firecracker, if it blew just a tiny little bit of material through your skin, tetanus was fatal at the time. There was no cure for it, so it made the fireworks even that much more dangerous.
As I mentioned, under a new law, people in certain New York counties which have opted in, not including the five boroughs of New York City, can set up fireworks on the 4th of July. Why do you think these restrictions have been loosened? Either of you can answer.
Well, I've been interested in the history of the regulation of fireworks, which has gone in cycles. There was a time in the 70s when all consumer fireworks, all firecrackers were threatened to be banned by the Consumer Product Safety Council. And that law was fought off by Chinese and Hawaiians who used firecrackers in their kind of traditional ceremonies. And I think it's partly just going in cycles, and I think partly anytime you make them illegal, you're encouraging a black market. So have to reach a balance so that people would rather go down and buy fireworks at the local fireworks stand and set them off, and you can control it, or are they going to go to an illegal supplier who may be making his own fireworks, which would be much more dangerous.
There was a considerable market in fireworks in Chinatown for many years until Rudy Giuliani sent police in to clean it up. But during Chinese New Year's, fireworks are set off. Is that illegal activity?
Absolutely.
It is now, yes, yes.
Phil, as somebody who knows a lot about this, do you think that it's a good idea to only allow professionals to set up firecrackers? Almost every year we hear about somebody losing a finger or a hand because of fireworks.
You may think that me coming from the professional fireworks industry would agree to that all consumer fireworks should be illegal and go watch a professional display. But it's the exact opposite. I believe, as Jack just stated, that there should be some degree of products that are legal for the general public to be able to enjoy lighting a sparkler, lighting a firecracker, lighting a ground spinner, something that's relatively controllable and regulated. The Consumer Product Safety Commission regulates very, very, very strictly manufacturing of fireworks, consumer fireworks. And being from New York, we know pretty much where all the displays are that have permits, that are legal permits and legal firework displays. And there are far more displays going on in the state of New York that are illegal than there are legal. And it's because there's nothing available. There's nothing legal to be able to, up until just recently, you couldn't buy a sparkler in the state of New York. Well, so what is the general public going to do? They're
what kinds of precautions should people take when they're setting off their own fireworks?
You know, believe it or not, a lot of it is common sense. Adult supervision. You're not going to give a three-year-old a package of firecrackers or a package of sparklers and say go off and have a good time. It's adult supervision. It's no different than having them, you know, having somebody working in a pool. You know, you have to have adult supervision. The product is safe if it's used properly. You know, with the volume of material that comes in, that is consumer fireworks that have been inspected by the CPSC, that comply with the CPSC, the injuries are not generally in that type of product line. The injuries are the product that people are getting from the black market that are not regulated because they can. That's where the majority of the injuries are. And the majority of the other injuries are because of, unfortunately, common sense.
A listener named Jack, another Jack, wonders, how and when did the grand finale, the shooting off of lots of fireworks at once before a firework show concludes, become a tradition?
Well, I would just say, Leonard, from my own perspective, seeing, you know, from the time I was a kid, the evolution, and Phil can talk a lot more detail about this. The show used to be spread out more with a little bit of a finale at the end. Now the shows tend to be shorter. They tend to have sometimes a couple of finales in the middle, sort of peaks in the middle, and they're usually about a half an hour with a huge finale, and that's just something people have come to expect, and it's the modern fashion.
And Phil, coordinated often with music.
Coordinated often with music, and to the finale point, the finale was not invented through fireworks. The finale is invented through just general entertainment. Whenever you go to pretty much any form of entertainment, the ending of that entertainment medium is generally met with the peak of the moment, the peak of the night, the peak of the performance. So the finale just follows the invention or the addition of a finale to a fireworks display is very similar to a play or to a movie or to any other form of entertainment. And the adding of music certainly gives the audience another dimension, another sensory to be stimulated by.
Now
you could go watch a very good fireworks performance that has no music because of the quality of the program, the balance of the colors, the type of effects that are used, and the technology too.
Now, I've been hearing the Gucci name associated with fireworks for pretty much all of my life. How long has your family been working in fireworks?
Oh, my second great-grandfather started in 1850 in Bari, Italy. Again, another Italian heritage. In the second generation, first and second generation of my family, my second great-uncle came through Ellis Island, just like many other immigrants did in 1900. And my grandfather apprenticed under him, so he's the third generation. My father and my uncle and my aunt being the fourth, and then myself and my brothers and sisters and cousins, and now my daughter, son, cousin, are out on the barge representing the sixth generation.
And what does that barge look like?
It looks very industrial right now. It's a steel rusted barge, or three of them actually tied linear to each other, 500 feet long. On there is a series of steel racking systems that hold cylinders or mortar tubes that are made out of fiberglass. It's not very colorful. It's and then inside of each one of those mortar tubes is a specific firework shell that has an address that gets wired into a computer system. And all of the cables and controllers of the computer system come back to one steel container, which is the shelter that the pyrotechnician will sit in the night of the program. We'll send the wireless feed from the esplanade, from the hatch shell, that gives a signal and gives the information to the computer to fire the fireworks in the order that it's been designed.
Jack, how far back did fireworks become associated with the 4th of July?
Actually, John Adams, soon after the signing of the Declaration of Independence, wrote to Abigail, his wife, and he said that he expected that from this time forward, the Declaration would be celebrated with bonfires and illuminations. And some people think he was referring to fireworks. There was also a custom back then to what they called illuminate buildings, and they put candles all over the building on the roof and in all the windows. So he may have been referred to that as well, but there's always been fireworks associated with the Declaration of Independence and the Revolutionary War.
Now, the book we've been talking about in relation to this conversation is Gunpowder, Alchemy, Bombards, and Pyrotechnics. But your latest book is called Band of Giants. Does that have any relationship to fireworks?
Well, it has a relationship to gunpowder in the sense that it's a narrative of the Revolutionary War, focusing on some of the lesser-known great American heroes of that war.
And as far as the Grucci's are concerned, are you doing anything in New York, Phil?
We are. Actually, not in New York. We're at Liberty State Park behind the Statue of Liberty. We have three locations, three individual theaters that are silhouette the Statue of Liberty. We're also in Philadelphia and Boston, which is somewhat of the trifecta of patriotic locations around the country.
So New Yorkers will have a choice between watching yours behind the Statue of Liberty and watching the Macy's display?
That's correct, yes. Macy's is a fantastic program as well. We're not performing at Macy's.
How much does a typical
show... We are performing at 65 other locations, so we're very busy.
How much does a typical show cost, or is that a silly question?
No, it's not a silly question. It's, depending on the celebration, but the budgets can range as low as $3,500 US up and high into the millions of dollars.
And we have to leave it there, unfortunately. if I decide to do it, I'll probably try for the lower end costs. Phil Grucci, CEO of Fireworks by Grucci, and Jack Kelly, author of Gunpowder, Alchemy, Bombards, and Pyrotechnics. Thank you both so much for participating in today's Please Explain Look at Fireworks.
Thanks, Leonard.
Thank you very much. Thank you.